Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington and soon to be Liberty State. Brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right and left, it's about right and wrong. It's about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ. It's about not ending in prayer, but it is about moving to action as well. And let's talk a little bit about Ephesians 2, 5 through 6. God made us alive together with Christ and raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. We just got to trust the Lord, walk with him. And well, talk to you guys out there once again. I was just here in Ellensburg yesterday at the cattle summit that was there. Met a lot of ranchers I hadn't met before and some that I know very, very well. Some who actually listen to Patriot Radio whenever they get the chance. And my hat's off to you for continuing the legacy of freedom and liberty, for teaching it to the next generation, and for caring enough to want to keep what we have now as a free country for our posterity. And one thing struck me, one thing really struck me. You know, as men, sometimes we don't want to show up. We've got other things to do. Sometimes we just don't want to show up. But if, when we show up, we can have a profound difference in changing the direction of a state, of a country, of the world, when we show up. And so it was great to see all those men there yesterday, grizzled hands, some still dirty from the range. And all they want is to leave freedom for the next generation. Wow. What an example for all of us. And guys, you know, I want to throw a couple of ideas out there. If you haven't done this yet, what does it mean to be a man? It means to be a man to show up. To show up. It means to be a man to pray with our wives every night and every morning too. And one thing that I think is kind of interesting, you know, we've talked on this show before about physical exertion, physical preparedness, being physically in shape. And I believe now, and I didn't used to. I used to be very uncomfortable with this, but I think we should be working out with our families. Now, some are already doing that. Some are already, it's calving. It's calving time of the year for ranchers. So they're already doing this with their families. But for those of us that are living in the city or close to the city, are we working out with our families? And not just once a week on a hike or something like that, but are we doing it every day? Are we actually working out with our families? Now, for some men, and for me in particular, this was a problem. I just didn't like to work out really with anybody else. I just like to go charge up into the mountains hiking or doing whatever. And I've learned that that's not the best way to do it. It's not the best example, that we can actually set a better example by working out with our families, even if it's maybe a little more difficult for us to do so. So I would just challenge you, praying together, going through some physical labor, physical exhaustion, physical exertion together. And for us men out there, showing up. No more excuses, showing up so that we don't let our country go in the wrong direction on our watch. And that brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. In the Middle East, we've talked about all the different parties that are involved right now in the Middle East. Russia arming Syria with these S-300 air defense systems. We've talked about Iran, and now Iran is threatening that if we exit the nuke deal, there will be catastrophic consequences. You know, they love to use these big words like that over there. But anyway, that's what they're saying. And it very much looks like the next flashpoint is going to be between Israel and Iran. Shifting to Asia, the North-South Korea summit begins Friday, tomorrow. Kind of brings up the idea there may be a Russian summit to follow. Who knows? But also on the international front, Venezuela continues to be a lesson in what not to do. Starvation and suicides up, hyperinflation over 8,000% since last year. 8,000%. Unbelievable. So, you know, for all the folks out there that just really poo-pooed that, you're wrong. You've been proven wrong now. And the issue is, what are the policies that were in Venezuela that we share here in the United States that probably we don't want to have here anymore? For example, the Federal Reserve System. Is there another option? Now, I have gotten arguments about this. Oh, there were huge fluctuations in the market. Look, there have been huge fluctuations in the market with the Federal Reserve System to the point of bringing us to the brink of economic catastrophe. So the argument doesn't hold true that the system is somehow better now. It's not. And in fact, as many, I believe, correctly argue, we're building a bubble so big that there is no way to get around it if it bursts. And, you know, for what it's worth out there to people, it's not just an audit. The entire scam of the Federal Reserve System that we owe debt to ourselves and we're paying interest, it needs to go away. And if you don't know that or you disagree with that, I would submit that you take a look at Leviticus, okay? And take a look at the idea behind the Sabbath year and the Jubilee year, and the economic implications of those systems where there is a reset every 7 years, a reset every 49, 50 years. And is that really the way that God wants to see an economy run? Just take a look at it. And it's interesting if you kind of put that over Rabbi Jonathan Kahn's views on the Shemitah year and the implications behind that to our economy when we don't take that Sabbath year and we don't recognize it. It's very interesting. And it's just, I think it would be a fascinating economic study for somebody. And I have not heard of a book out there that addresses this issue. But the fact of the matter is that inflation is a tax, and the interest payments are not going to ourselves. They're going to a group of private bankers. And so Venezuela, similarly, where profits were going to the ruling elite, and it ended in catastrophe, should we not try to head that off? Should we not try to live by bubbles? And, you know, I hear a lot of pushback from people who have investments in the stock market, et cetera, et cetera. You can't do that. It would collapse. Nobody's advocating it all at once. But clearly, the direction we're headed with $60 trillion in unfunded liabilities, and that is a conservative number. Almost $20 trillion in debt. It's not sustainable. And we need to realize, too, that we owe over half that debt, the U.S. debt, to ourselves, technically, or to this group of bankers, the Federal Reserve. I mean, that doesn't make sense. And eventually, this is how currencies die, just like in Venezuela, you have this massive hyperinflation. And so there, you either allow the corrections to happen normally, or you allow the corrections to happen catastrophically. And I think Venezuela, we really need to look at that and pay attention to it, internalize those lessons learned, and how can we change policy back here at home? On the national front, swarm drones officially debut. Department of Defense putting out a video. Creepy. On a separate note, very interesting. McCabe, the, I would argue now, disgraced FBI deputy chief, ordered the stand down on the Hillary probe, according to WorldNet Daily and sources they're citing. Even more interesting than that, Judicial Watch, also being cited by WorldNet Daily, saying they now have emails that prove collusion between Hillary Clinton's State Department and the Clinton Foundation. So I think, you know, we're hearing these things come out. I'm guessing that there is indeed an investigation occurring, and we may see some of these people prosecuted under the Trump administration. And you may see a tremendous backlash against Trump, but these people do need to be held accountable. We need to back Trump in making sure this investigation comes to fruition. Also on the national front, EPA, Scott Pruitt, introducing a rule, just transparency rule, saying that EPA studies should be public. And if they're public, then the EPA can rely on them. If they're not public, then the EPA cannot rely on those studies. And there's hemming and hawing and wailing and gnashing of teeth. Well, that's weird. Science is a method. And if you do not allow your science, your method, to be reproduced, then you are not supposed to be taken seriously. And so allowing these things to be public and relying on publicly available studies makes sense from the scientific method standpoint. The reproducing of the experiment. So it's interesting that now all the environmentalists are getting up in arms. Well, they're getting up in arms because they don't want to have their shams exposed. Also, I think that this is just a first step. The Trump administration needs to be looking at these things called interagency agreements. Okay, the Department of Ecology in Washington State, we passed a law that required those interagency agreements to be put online. 4,000 interagency agreements, okay, that have fiscal and policy implications across the board. And I think we need to be doing this at the federal level too. What interagency agreements are there between the EPA and state governments, EPA and local governments, EPA and private parties, whatever it is? What are these interagency agreements? This is how a lot of money moves. And it moves outside of the budget sometimes. And that's really key for people to understand that. So I hope that they pick up on this and go toward that as far as accountability is concerned. Also on the national front, and this is coming from the New American, the Supreme Court, during oral arguments in Trump versus Hawaii, expressing skepticism about arguments against the Trump travel ban. So some people read into that. That might give a hint at where that case may end up. Also on the national front, it finally coming out that defensive gun use, 3.5 more times, 3.5 more times, okay, are guns used to stop crimes, prevent crimes, than they're used to commit. Now, some people say it's as high as 10 because there's a lot of crimes that are stopped, obviously, that are not reported as being stopped. But just proving that the right to bear arms still is true, and those people that are against the right to bear arms and are for gun control are in rebellion to the Constitution and, I would argue, common sense, and really are trying to put poor people in high-crime neighborhoods at risk, and especially single mothers in those neighborhoods at risk. I believe that when you put all these regulations on there, you are pricing guns out of the range of those folks, and you're making their lives a heck of a lot harder. So if you really, truly care about the poor, you should care about the right to bear arms. If you care about the single mom, you should care about the right to bear arms. The single college student, you should care about the right to bear arms. Also on the national front, Jim Rickards again saying that the IMF is going to be introducing a digital crypto SDR, strategic drawing right. Now that's the basket of currencies at the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, that many consider as a world currency, okay? And they want to introduce this digital cryptocurrency. Rickards is claiming to become a world currency. And he's saying it was going to happen sometime in the time frame at the end of April, toward June. You don't know. But it brings up some interesting implications. I'm going to continue to watch this and report on it. And as we get more information, we'll bring that out. All right. Also on the regional front, I brought up RCW 4337. Everybody listening should go read that. RCW 4337. Now, yours truly is sending a public records request into the Department of Ecology to find out about the weather modification notices of intent that have been filed in accordance with that RCW. If any weather modification has been done in Washington state, and then under RCW 4337-150, whether any liability claims have been filed as a result of adverse effects of that weather modification. And on top of that, find out who's doing this and what the results were. So I'll let you know what the response is on this, but weather modification is real. There's an entire chapter in our RCW on this, and in most states, actually. And you can go to climateviewer.org, and they have a list of all these, climateviewer.org. Jim Lee, and he's going to be actually at the Red Pill Expo. Take a look at this stuff. It's real. It's legitimate. I want to know, for the sake of our ranchers and our farmers and everybody else, have they been doing this? How? When? With what equipment? Does the Department of Ecology have equipment? I don't know. We're going to find out, though, and we'll report it on the show. Also on the regional front, Washington State Fusion Center responding to a public records request from Muckrock. And Muckrock is an organization that does routine public records requests and then publishes them on their website and aggregate for people to actually see, okay? And they got a response back on psychotronic warfare or experimentation, excuse me, not warfare, experimentation, psychotronic electromagnetic, just some weird stuff, okay? Now, the document clearly looks like it didn't come from the Fusion Center, but it looks like they maybe collected it or were monitoring, I don't know. But apparently, Muckrock has sent in a follow-up public records request to get more information on this. So we'll report on that as well. But they have today, an article on the Central Intelligence Agency's archives regarding remote viewing. Okay, and it's defined. This is from the CIA document, defined as an intellectual process by which a person perceives characteristics of a location remote from that person. It does not involve any electronic sensing devices at or focused at the target, nor does it involve any classical photo interpretation of photographs obtained from overhead or oblique means. And this is from that document. Well, they put this online. You can go read it for yourself. This is actually the remote viewing protocol, formerly classified as secret, from the Central Intelligence Agency. So this is all coming on the heels of this Netflix series, Wormwood. And just fascinating stuff where they're talking about all the things that they've done in this area. And some people say, oh, it's just not true. It's never happened. Well, these are actual documents. You can go read them yourself. The existence of MKUltra and some of these other experiments is absolutely beyond question in documentation. And it just brings up, and this is back in the 70s to the mid-90s, this was happening. Okay, so check it out, because it raises some questions about how do we hold bureaucrats accountable for these types of experiments, especially on people that are unwitting. And I'm not saying that the document says that. The protocols don't clearly say that. But anyway, fascinating stuff. Primary source documents. Go take a look at it for yourself. Also on the regional front, Tim Iman wins. This scheme cooked up by the Democrats in the Washington State Legislature to do an end run around the Constitution and try to essentially amend an initiative before it was passed and effective was thrown out by the judge, and I-940 is now going to the ballot. Now, I-940 is a horrific piece of legislation, I believe. It's written in such a way as to make it virtually impossible for law enforcement, and so to do their jobs. So it's a terrible piece of legislation. But trying to figure out an unconstitutional way to fix it is not the answer. So it's going to be on the ballot for people to vote on here in Washington State this November. Also on the regional front, Seattle coming up with another brilliant idea. Hey, why don't we tax every business for the number of employees they have? $540 a year, based on some calculations. You know, maybe we need to do an economic class. An economics like 101 class for folks that live in Seattle. That, you know, you tax because you have a number of employees means you're not going to have a lot of employees, and then people are going to be out of work, and then... And it doesn't make sense. Come on. Just, you know. I don't know. That's why we need the 51st state, folks. We're going to talk about that a little bit with our guest today. But we need the 51st state because these guys just don't get it in downtown Seattle. I don't know if it's drinking too much lattes or what. But they just don't get it. And you know what? They don't want to get it. They don't really care. And, you know, they say we're a bunch of welfare freeloaders over here in Eastern Washington. You know, we're so sorry for being such a burden and being such a bunch of ignorant hicks over here. Will you please let us go, right? But the fact is we're not ignorant hicks. The intelligent literacy rate shows we're actually more intelligently literate than the people in downtown Seattle. By a lot, by the way. Oh. Anyway, all right, let's go to the local front. Red Pill Expo coming up June 21st through 23rd. Freedom Project, Crisis in Education with Dr. Duke Pesta, coming May 5th at Center Place, 3 o'clock. May 5th, Center Place, 3 o'clock. In free admission, as I understand it. So he's going to be talking about the crisis, but then moving to solutions. We had him on the show the other day. I think there's a lot of value there for you folks out there that are debating whether to homeschool or not, or maybe you're homeschooling and you want to improve it upon it. I think this is the thing to come to. And let's say you're not. Let's say you don't have any kids that you're worrying about homeschooling or anything. You can at least get the information on the solutions and share that with people around you. And last but not least, my Freedom Rally fundraiser coming up May 8th, Terezi Farm, 6 o'clock. Trying to put something online. We've been having some problems trying to get stuff online, and I'll make sure to get that here in the next couple of days. But May 8th, Terezi Farm, Freedom Rally fundraiser. It's going to be a great time. Look forward to having everybody there. Have a new Republican Spokane County Chair, Cecily Wright of the Northwest Grassroots, was elected last night by a huge margin. And she's going to be there as well. saying a few words. So if you've never met her, you have an opportunity to come and listen and see where the direction is for freedom and liberty in Washington State and in Spokane County. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for the show. And make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US. Like the page, share it with your friends and family. And if you get a chance and you want to keep us on the air, you can always go to VoteShea.com. Well, my guest today is Glenn Tate, author of 299 Days, An Enigma, A Mystery, and A Fairly Decent Shooter. Thanks for being on the show once again, Glenn. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I've been called a lot of things, but an enigma is not one of them. But hey, I'm adding it to the collection of amazing things that have happened since writing these books and getting to know guys like you who are, you know, patriot leaders, and it's just an honor. Thank you.
You know, it's funny, about once every 2 weeks I get somebody trying to guess who you are asking me.
Oh, we'll have to sit down and you'll have to tell me what some of the guesses are, because I imagine some of them are wildly inaccurate, because I'm not nearly as interesting as people probably think I am.
It is pretty funny how wild some of the guesses are. And, you know, and then they're like, can you give me a hint? Just a little hint. So you're doing well keeping this mysterious aura around you. You're doing a good job. So, well, let's talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about the 299 Days series. You're expanding it. The universe is growing. I'm really excited to see that. Where do you see the 299 Days universe headed?
Well, it's going in two major directions. One is Shelby Gallagher's book, and you had her on last week. I listened to that show. It's fantastic. What a great interview. And I'm working with her on those. It's all her creation, and she gets all the credit. I did a little bit of storyline development. A little bit of a side note, but it's about that. She sent me this manuscript, and I get a lot of manuscripts, you know, draft books from people, and she said, this is probably no good, but could you just kind of look at it? And I looked at it, and I hate looking at those, because usually I have to tell people that their stuff, you know, is no good. I don't mean to be a jerk or anything, but it's like, oh, geez, I could not stop reading this. And there was one chapter 3 in particular, that was so dramatic and so gut-wrenching that I texted her and I said, I'm pacing around my house looking for a hammer. And she said, okay. And I said, I need to pick which hammer I'm going to use to cave this guy's face in that you wrote about. It was that. I'm a nice, decent Christian gentleman, and I don't talk or feel that way, but this brought it out, and people who read chapter 3 will understand what I'm talking about. Anyway, so it made a big impact on me. So working with her on that, in the book 1 is out of hers, book 2 is being edited, book 3 is on the way in a while, who knows when. And book 3, the reason I give you that background is that book 3 of hers, there's going to be a crossover chapter, and her characters are going to be coming to Pierce Point in my book series. And there's going to be a pretty amazing thing that happens there. So there's a connection to that. So direction number one is Shelby's books, which are, from a woman's perspective, as your listeners know, listen to that. And I think that's really missing in this genre. I think that patriots and preppers are some of the most egalitarian, fair, open, you know, not sexist, evil, awful people. But we just don't hear the female perspective too much, and that changed with it. So that's direction number one. Direction number two, really excited. Of course, 299 Days occurs in Washington State, where we christened the state of New Washington, which a lot of us are looking forward to, which could be liberty, by the way. We'll talk more about that, I suspect. But it was about Washington State. Well, there's going to be a new series called 399 Days. It takes place in Maine. And I'm working on story development and doing editing. It's being written. The laboring oar of the project is another author who I know very well, who's part of our world. And he's from Maine. And it's a fascinating look at how another entirely different region of the country, how the people there deal with roughly the same situation of a collapse. And I had thought, by the way, I'm a bit, I guess, biased in a sense. I'd always thought of the Northeast as a bunch of, you know, gun-grabbing kind of Bostonian sort of folks. And I kind of got educated on the state of Maine, and there's some really good people up in the state of Maine, so it's going to be neat. And then there are, there's at least one other, a regional 299-day-based series that, again, I'll be participating in, but not going to take the credit for writing it because I didn't write it. And it takes place in a southern state. So it's giving folks a glimpse of how the same set of conditions nationally are dealt with by people in different regions. And it's going to be fascinating. So I'm back in the writing game, and it feels good. I probably will not be doing any sort of book 11, 12, 13, unless I'm inspired. And you and I have had public and private conversations about this. Unless God sort of sits me down and starts moving my fingers on the keyboard, because he has all the talent and I don't, I'm not going to write books that are completely my creation. Of course, they're God's creation, but I'm not going to do that unless I'm inspired, because it only works when you're working, you know, he's working through you. So, but I can do these other things, and it's fun, and it's great. I'm getting back out on the road. Shelby and I did a book signing in Tacoma last weekend. We're going to be having one in Spokane, and more on that in a moment. And so that's fun to get out and meet people. So that's what's going on. It's a rather long-winded answer. I appreciate you indulging me. I think that's what elected officials say. Please, thank you for indulging my long answer. But thank you for indulging my long answer.
But you don't need to do that, because usually politicians mean that in kind of a weird way. And that's not you.
Oh, so. Okay, good. Thank you.
That is the secret language we speak, right? Something like that. Now, mm-hmm. See, everybody that I meet now from now on who's heard the show is going to be like, are you doing what you did with Glenn on the radio? Seriously, to me? So let's talk a little bit about what's been going on. You know, we've nearly averted World War III, what, twice in the last, you know, 4 months. And now all of a sudden we're talking peace summit in, you know, at least North South Korea, maybe even a Russian summit, according to General Valley. We don't know. You know, maybe that's in the cards. What is your take on what's happening in the world today? I mean, and you have a lot of sources that have been feeding you information. I mean, what's your perspective?
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. First of all, to go back a few months, actually about a year, a friend of a friend who's a very, very elite special operator, he told my friend about North Korea being extremely sensitive, and this guy said he was moving his family to Montana, and he's never seen it like this before. We've heard of reports, and I know John Jacob has talked about this. The Pentagon parking lot seems pretty full, even late into the night, and those sorts of anecdotal things, which are pretty good indicators. I obviously, you know, don't have classified information of any kind, but and there were other things going on. I think we came very, very, very close to a problem, like probably a North Korean missile attack on Guam, for example, about a year ago, and that's been very, very tense. I don't know how President Trump does some of these things. I probably don't want to know, but he seems to be living up to this reputation of being a really good negotiator. Now, it could be smoke and mirrors. I could be misled. I don't know. I don't know anything anymore on the national or international level. I don't know what to believe. But I think the fact that he's going to sit down with Kim Jong-un is pretty impressive. And so I don't know. But I think that the world stage has so much to do with economics. It has so much to do with things like petrodollar. I'm very concerned because, as your listeners probably know, oil throughout the world is bought and sold in dollars. So if you are Argentina and you want to buy some oil, you need to have dollars to do the transaction. How do you get dollars? You buy U.S. Treasury notes. You buy debt, which basically is convertible into dollars, short-term debt. So you need to buy U.S. debt in order to buy stuff like oil. The Chinese, 2 weeks ago, started selling oil in their currency, not U.S. dollars. And they have, thing I saw was 8% of of the world market. By the way, the oil market is so enormous that 8% of it is an enormous amount of money. And so if you start chipping away at the U.S. supremacy when it comes to people having to have our debt in order to buy and sell things, if other countries don't need our debt, they're not going to buy it because it's a terrible deal. I mean, who would buy, you know, the promise of the United States government to pay you 3% over 10 years? I don't know that the United States government's going to have anything other than incredibly inflated dollars in the next 10 years. So it's not because it's a great deal. It's because people need it. And as that chips away, so it's things like that that I think lead to differences with Saudi Arabia and those sorts of things and how that plays out, Shia, Sunni split. And so I think those sorts of things often start wars. Perhaps miscalculation to do, that's what really scares me. I think, and I don't have a military background, and you do, so perhaps you can correct me, I think that there's so much technology now, so many early warning systems and so many control systems. I think with the more technology we have, the easier it is to make sure that a missile doesn't fly by mistake. So don't know about that, but yes, I think it's the most tense internationally that we've seen for decades. I think that certainly since the fall of the Soviet Union several decades ago, it is very, very tense. I see Russia possibly doing some very adventuristic things in the bulk in the Baltic states. In all of that, I know you have a connection to that region, well, to Ukraine, which is not the Baltics. But so that's a concern. That might be something that could be triggered by miscalculation. You could have a rogue Russian-backed separatist group in Donetsk and Lugansk regions of Ukraine, and that could start something. So, yes, it's very, very tense. I guess I would summarize it this way. For the past couple decades, we've had sort of this business-as-usual situation where countries are, yeah, they squabble, and sometimes they invade each other a little bit, but basically business was going on, and things were kind of predictable. I think with the U.S. dollar whittling away and being less and less of the stabilizing force in the world that it was, I think things are more unpredictable now, and so they're unpredictable. So I'm concerned. I've never been. I don't usually stay up at night worrying about international affairs, but now I think there's evidence that it is a bigger and bigger threat to people in Spokane and everywhere else in the United States.
So I want to kind of shift gears a little bit and talk, because that's external. Talk a little bit internally. I was stunned this morning when I opened my edition of Northwest Lawyer. Now, for the listeners that don't know what Northwest Lawyer is, okay, this is the magazine put out by the Washington State Bar Association that I get whether I want to or not, okay? And in this magazine was a huge, I think it was 5, maybe 6-page color article with maps from Hugh Spitzer, a law professor at the University of Washington, talking about how a little-known clause may remake the United States of America. And that clause was Article 4, Section 3, and he was talking about splitting states. It was amazing. I couldn't believe it. It made the mainstream. What is your take?
Yeah, it is. And you know what's funny? As you said, your copy of Northwest Lawyer, since I care so much about the esteemed profession, it was in the garbage can, honestly, in my office. I'm talking to you from my office. So while you were talking, I went to my garbage can and I pulled out the Northwest Lawyer, because normally it's full of Seattle liberal nonsense and I don't even read it anymore. And I'm looking at what you were talking about. It is mind-blowing. Oh, my goodness. There are all these maps about Pacific Cascadia and Texas and Louisiana Purchase being a state, and Kendiola, which looks like Kentucky and Indiana, and oh my goodness gracious. And then there's a pictorial of all the states from a map all kind of cut up. And by the way, Hugh Spitzer is a very, I think, well-respected, I mean, he's a liberal guy, but I mean, he's a professor, and he's very well thought of. And so he's not some crackpot, and he's a leftist too. So I guess if a leftist says something, it's probably got to be true. But no, I'm kidding about that. But he's a real legitimate, you know, legal scholar. And I have to read this now. Thank you for bringing this to my attention. This is mind-blowing. State realignment, state split-up are some of the sub-headlines. Oh, my goodness. You know, this idea that state boundaries, as they currently exist, are sacrosanct. I have a map on my wall, which is for TV or I'd show people. It's got the boundaries of the state of Washington that were proposed, and it pretty much took in Idaho, Montana, took in part of North Dakota, Oregon had part of Idaho, and it was circa, I want to say, 1866 or 67. And I have that map up in my office because I look at it and I think to myself, the current boundaries of states, it's not like, you know, God created the earth and had these, like, boundaries already. I mean, they come and they go. It's natural. It's normal. And I think we're going to see some more of it. I thought 4 or 5 years ago the idea of splitting up states was something that was probably wishful thinking. I no longer think that because I'll give you a really good example of what I'm talking about, and that's California. There's a initiative on the ballot, received all the signatures in California, which, by the way, in California, getting all the signatures necessary to put something on the ballot is an amazingly large effort because of all the people there. So it's a serious thing when something gets on a California ballot, and it's to create three states out of the current California, Northern California, Southern California, and plain old California. And I got to thinking about that, so I'm really glad we're talking about this, because one of the reasons I've always heard people say that there could never be a Liberty or Eastern Oregon or fill in the blank is because with a state comes two U.S. senators, of course, and at least one member of the House of Representatives. The argument always was, oh, Congress will never approve a new state because whatever party is in charge doesn't want to create a state and give two more Senate seats to the other party. Right. And kind of makes sense, but here's what's changed. Let's say California splits up into three states. That means California currently has two U.S. senators, and they would have six U.S. senators. So the liberals would get four more U.S. senators. I know there's some really good folks in Northern California, and they're not all liberal, but yes, it would be gerrymandered. We all know this, the boundaries of the new state. So it would be liberal at the state level. So you would get four more Democrat U.S. senators. Okay, well, last time I checked, the Republicans were in charge of the U.S. Senate, and hopefully still will be. I could see a deal. And this is, as you know, I've observed politicians. I've never been one. I think this is how politicians think and deals are made sometimes. Hey, Democrats, we'll give you four extra U.S. Senate seats, which means we, the Republicans, want four extra U.S. Senate seats. So everything will be the same, which means there will be two states that will now be majority Republican. I see Liberty fitting that bill. It's the pathway. I can see this politically as something that kills several birds with one stone. The Democrats get two extra states, and we get extra states. Their states have more population than ours. Who cares? Whatever. But in the Senate, things are the same. I mean, before the Civil War, the first Civil War, I hate to say that, there were all kinds of, as we know from history, creating new states that would be Republican or Democrat, that is to say non-slave or slave, or perhaps Whig, not even Republican, back if you go back far enough. And so this idea of creating new states to balance out U.S. Senate seat representation is not a new idea. It's American history. And so that's a pathway, and I'm even more enthused about Liberty. I just wish you could have the boundaries pick up some of the rural parts of Western Washington, so maybe I could avail myself of the blessings of Liberty. But I think it's even more possible now because of that thing. And then you point me to a Hugh Spitzer article about states breaking up and that clause of the U.S. Constitution that clearly allows this, which is majority votes. I mean, majority votes. It's not really hard to do. So yeah,
it isn't. In your books, you talk about kind of, you know, there are people in different geographic areas that share the same values, beliefs, cultures, traditions, heritage, generally speaking. And this just makes sense. You know, if downtown Seattle wants to be better represented for their socialist policies, they would want to split too. You know, I mean, this is not just for one group of people. And if Southwest Washington, you know, wants to become part of Liberty, awesome, you know. But the fact is that this is not a new idea. This is history. This is the history of the world, where geographic regions have formed not, you know, because a bunch of people moved in, but these geographic regions have formed around a group of people that have the same cultures, beliefs, values, traditions, etc.
Oh, and absolutely. And just look at how states, the center of gravity of population and political influence in a state changes at the beginning of this state, as I understand it. Walla Walla was the big center of everything. I know from having lived in the Midwest, there's part of Illinois that's west of the Mississippi, which blows people's minds. The river shifted. It's called Kaskaskia. It was the first capital of the state of Illinois. It's in southern Illinois. And southern Illinois, in the early 1800s, was the hub of commerce and everything else. And there was this little teeny village, this little cow town village called Chicago that no one paid attention to. Well, look at how things have changed. So, you know, having state boundaries, my point is this, having state boundaries based on Walla Walla being in charge of the state or Kaskaskia being in charge of Illinois, things change and boundaries should change accordingly. They're not set in stone. They're lines on maps. They're legal descriptions in statutes. You know, you follow this river and you go between this river and you go to this latitude and this longitude. That's what a state is.
That's it. It's just, it's an arbitrary, quite frankly, an arbitrary boundary, sometimes based on geographic features, but kind of an arbitrary boundary most of the time. And I think this is the wave of the future. I really believe it. I took a look at a map of Europe and all the autonomy movements in Europe. I mean, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of autonomy movements in Europe because they're facing a similar issue. People do not feel like they're represented. They do not want to have things jammed down their throats. There is a Whereas the 20th century really marked centralization in governments, it looks like the 21st century is really about and is going to be about decentralization. And we may just see something that we've never seen before, where you have states that are totally socialist and then you have states that are totally free.
Exactly. And I think that the founders would be happy, not about the socialist part, but I think they would. They would accept that as the price of federalism. I mean, people forget, too, and you just brought up a really good point. People forget how really different the 13 colonies were from each other. They were very, very different. You've obviously got the South and the North, but you've got things like there were religious differences. Rhode Island was had a predominant religion. Maryland was predominantly Catholic. Pennsylvania was predominantly Quaker. Now, folks got along, and that's good, but I think a lot of people 250 years ago would say Pennsylvania, Maryland, boy, those guys, they're not like us. And it kind of worked because it was a very loose confederation. Oh my goodness, what a terrible word, but it was a confederation and things worked out well. And things don't have to be homogenized, and they can't be anymore. A generation or two ago, things were, I'm going to make up a word, homogenizable. And they're not now. I mean, in the 60s, Walter Cronkite came on TV. Everybody had a TV set. Everybody, you know, identified as Americans, and there was an understanding of what that meant, and there was conduct that was good and conduct that was bad based on being American. Immigrants were falling all over themselves and couldn't wait to assimilate and be Americans. They were proud to be Americans, and that all, I shouldn't say it's all gone. There's some amazing immigrants that are just fantastic, freedom-loving people, but it isn't universally true anymore. And so this idea that we have to be homogenized, 330 million people have to basically act the same. Show me a place on Earth where 330 million people are that similar. You know, I can't think of any chunk of people that big. And so let people be socialists for about 6 months until they get really hungry, and then they change their mind. So, you know, let them try it. I think it's fantastic. One of the themes in the 299 Days books, it's about Seattle. it's sort of the question the Patriots in Western Washington are saying, what do we do about Seattle? There's two schools of thought. One is to go liberate them sort of against their will. The other school of thought, which is favored by me and my character, is let them lie in the bed they've created. Let them enjoy this utopia. And pretty soon, they'll come knocking on the door, and we can decide if we would like them back. But, you know, you don't have to do anything overt or aggressive, because socialism always fails. The problem with socialism is it has to be aggressive and belligerent and go conquer new territory and go steal people's stuff in order to keep its Ponzi scheme going. So I'm not saying that socialists are nice people and all that, but it will implode upon itself. Look at California. I can't help but think one of the reasons to create three states is that there are, even in that state, three different levels of comfort or discomfort with what is quite honestly a textbook definition of a socialist state, which would be California. So, yeah, homogenization is not a long-lasting solution, and things will settle into what makes the most sense. And people getting to be, governed the way that they basically want to is the way human beings work. They only put up with dictates from above, like you mentioned Europe and the EU. They only put up with that for so long. And then they, Catalonia, Brexit, start alternative mechanisms.
I agree. And I think, too, you know, this entire movement is giving people hope. I gave a presentation to Franklin County here over the weekend, 300 people there. It was phenomenal response at the end of it. We're selling flags faster than we can almost keep up with it right now. And people are flying that flag, and it's generating a lot of buzz. Hey, what's that? What does that mean? Liberty. I mean, you heard about it, and people get to talk about liberty, not just the state, but the state of mind. And I think that that's really what is changing things right now. We've only got a couple minutes left. I want to give you an opportunity, if you could plug 299 days, and also just kind of give the folks an idea of when you guys are going to be here in Spokane for a book signing.
You betcha. Yeah, it's 299days.com is the place to find the materials. Shelby's books are called A Great State, and those can be found at agreatstate.com. And let me look at my calendar and tell you the precise date it's changed, so I want to give people the correct date of the Spokane thing. So make some noise to fill in some dead air while I look at this, if you don't mind.
Well, that's no problem, at least on my end. I'm really excited. I'm really excited that people are beginning to wake up. I have a friend of mine who predicted that, all these polls, that Republicans were going to sit out and everything, and people are getting excited. And I think one of the things that's getting Republicans excited and getting conservatives excited are these ideas like Liberty State and the idea behind it that, we don't have to live in a homogenous, dictated society, that we can actually determine our futures. We can actually live free according to what our founding fathers really, I think, truly left us.
You bet. And so now I looked at my calendar. Thanks, everybody, for indulging me. It is May 12th, which is Saturday, from 1 to 3 at V-Twin Brewery. I don't have the address, but I'm sure it's Google.
It's out on Argonne, yeah. Yeah, it's Argonne Road just before Montgomery, headed north. So for everybody out there, it's Argonne Road in Spokane Valley.
It's been great with these book signings. We just put the word out, and readers say, hey, I have a brew pub, I have a gun store, I have a place, a restaurant. We want to draw area patriots to patriot businesses, and it's just been this grassroots thing, and it's so fun to watch. So, yeah, that's how we were linked up with V-Twin in Spokane, and hope you can make it, and it'll be fun. It'll be fun.
Well, Glenn, it's been appropriate having you on. I didn't want to make you nervous, so I didn't say anything at the beginning of the show, but this is the 250th Patriot Radio, if you can believe that. 250.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, congratulations. You must be doing something right. You're giving people what they want and they need to hear, so that's good. Good for you. Congratulations.
Well, it's the most appropriate to have Glenn Tate on the show for 250 It's close to 299. We will definitely have you on for 299.
That would be great.
Thanks for being on again, my friend, and take care of yourself, and look forward to seeing you here in Spokane on May 12th.
Thank you. Wish you and your family all the best. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Glenn Tate, author, 299 Days, The Enigma, and a good friend as well. Just giving some great insight there on what's happening. And if you haven't read his books, I mean, you can't put them down. At least I couldn't. And now this new iteration with A Great State with Shelby Gallagher. This is so phenomenal because it's the perspective of truly what it means to be an American. And how that's translating into things like the Liberty State movement, and how it's translating into decentralization and this push around the world, not just here, but around the world, for decentralization and away from globalism. And as I said before the last presidential election, the election was going to be about nationalism versus globalism. But, you know, I'm going to revise that. It's about decentralization versus globalism, localism. If you will allow me to use the word tribalism in the best sense of that term versus globalism, in other words, local communities that share the same values, beliefs, cultures, heritage, that get together because of those ideas and want to pass those ideas of freedom and liberty on to their posterity. It's terrific. And you're going to hear, you know, you'll hear the socialists as this decentralization continues whine and cry, and they'll try to make it sound like people are just wanting to create a Christian hate cult and all this other garbage. The fact of the matter is liberty is for everyone, and that's why it's so appealing, and that's why it's bringing so much hope. And also, it's focused on truth, and truth comes from Jesus Christ. This is Matt Shea. Thank you very much for listening. May God bless all of you. May he make this generation the greatest one.